Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound, where today we're looking at a new exhibition in London called The Infinite Mix. We rarely do shows on just one thing, but this is so good we wanted to shout it from the rooftops. The Infinite Mix is an audiovisual feast that might fall under the category of video art, but before you start running for the hills, it's amazing. Music and sound are as much part of the show as screens, and it's as good as London's other artistic smash hit of unalloyed joy this year, Icelandic artist Ragnar Kjartansson at the Barbican. We also felt that you use different faculties to enjoy it. This is an art show that you enjoy as if it's a music festival or a night out or a fairground or something. Refreshed and full of vim then, we give you Culture on Monocle 24. If you head over to 180 The Strand today, it might sound a bit like this.
Shall I come up? Shit. Y'all gotta make movies and shit. This is movies.
When do I shut off? And it's my turn to settle down. My main concern. Promise that you will sing about me.
What's happening?
Promise that you will sing.
Bam Bam is the best dancehall queen in Japan.
When I first came back to Earth, after 128 days of space, I thought I had ruined my life. The weight of your body is overwhelming. Even my ears felt heavy on my head.
The Infinite Mix is the show that's currently adorning the walls and hallways of this great brutalist building, an old office block just over the river from the Hayward Gallery's usual home. The Hayward, by the way, has got the builders in. The exhibition is a series of 10 audiovisual works that range from something like Stan Douglas's Luanda Kinshasa, a studio documentary come music film, to Cyprian Gaillard's Nightlife, a swirling, hypnotic, beautiful film set to a reggae loop via Elizabeth Price's sci-fi depiction of professional mourners and a loom that weaves fluoro stockings. Now, this is visual art with wonderful audio, and we are the radio, but we think we suit each other rather well. And to start us off, Ralph Rugoff, the director of the Hayward Gallery, tells us about the vision behind all this sound and vision.
All my life I want money and power, respect my mind or die from less shout. I pray my dick get biggest.
Ralph, well, congratulations, you've created the most amazing thing across the river from your old home, the Hayward Gallery here. I wonder what atmosphere you get off this show. I've walked around and felt like I've had a series of out-of-body experiences in a very, very good, nourishing way. How does it make you feel wandering around from room to room now that the show is hung, as it were, and finished?
Well, I think that's a good description you gave. I think each time you enter into a different work in the show, and there's 10 installations, you are entering a kind of different universe, and the spaces have been beautifully built within this kind of incredible glass building with views of the river. And so you are coming up for air, you're back in London, and then you enter into this dark space again, and you might be in a room with a 3D projection, you might be in a room with 20 screens around you, you might be wandering down a dark corridor, and there's what looks like a ghost singing Maria Callas arias at the end of it. So the goal in doing this show was to really give varied experiences and to look at the way artists are using film and video in really interesting ways that make sound really crucial, and that they use sound to create a sense of space around the work, and that they show us images. And, you know, it's we're all addicted to images on our phones and every screen we have. But here, in these kinds of spaces, the images sometimes take on a very physical aspect. And you realize that maybe images aren't all flat. You know, I know that sounds kind of crazy, but the way they affect us certainly often gives us a sense, changes our sense of space.
And I wanted to ask you about that. You said in your introduction that video art is not a visual medium. It's certainly not just a visual medium. These things leap off the walls. There's some amazing music, soundtracks, all sorts of noises and sort of audio protuberations coming from these things. That's obviously a very definite thing to have done, to have the mix quite high on some of these things. So you really feel the music and the sound as much as you feel the images jumping off the walls.
Yeah, I mean, I think I could go through most of the show with my eyes closed and get a huge amount out of it. Because the artists, a lot of artists have actually commissioned or composed themselves the soundtracks. Other artists have done, you know, really radical remixes, like Rachel Rose took a piece of music by Aretha Franklin and used a spectroscope to erase all the instrumentation and all the words. So the only thing you get are these wordless vocalizations of this amazing voice of Aretha Franklin, which Rachel said sounded to her like a voice that had been freed from a human body. Okay, and this is in a piece about an astronaut who's talking about what it's like to have a body in gravity after you've been in space for 180 days. And again, it's in a piece where Rachel created a screen that allows you to see through the screen and out the window of the building and to look at the city. So at times you're looking at an image, at times you're seeing the city through the image. These are really unusual ways of presenting what we usually refer to as video, and what I keep trying to have to refer to as audiovisual, because the audio is just as important.
Rachel's piece up there on the top floor feels like a bit of a motif of the whole show, this idea of anti-gravity somehow that you've sort of created. Was it very obvious which pieces went where? And there must have been a lot of to-ing and fro-ing with the artists and placing these works.
You know, some artists came in and they really knew they wanted to put their work in a special place in the building. So Dominique Gonzalez Foster, who created this kind of holographic apparition of Maria Callas, was thrilled when we took her into, because we're actually in two buildings here. There's a glass building in the middle of the space, and then there's a bridge that takes you to this stone building, which is completely abandoned and slightly derelict. And when she saw that space, she flipped. And if you'd seen it before we got to it, you'd realize that, yeah, it's the perfect place for a ghost to appear. This is a haunted corridor. And interestingly, she said, you know, I think this space adds about 50% more to the work. So space and how artists use it, we think of that happening with sculpture, but actually with works like this, it makes a huge difference too. And Cyprian Guyard also, who's got an amazing 3D film, Nightlife, there was only one place he really seriously considered, was which this vast, cavernous car park, which when we first looked at it, had, you know, water streaming from the ceiling, mice running around, totally post-apocalyptic space. But for this film of his, it's a great location. I mean, Cyprian's an artist who's fascinated by entropy, by chaos, by how things come together and fall apart. And it's a great place to end the exhibition, because people then go out and find themselves on a side street, which is not the way they came in, because they're exiting through the car park. And that's a nice final moment, I think, of disorientation, that you've been through this incredible journey. Artists really pushing you to look at things in ways that we're not used to looking at images. And that, of course, always leaves us disoriented, but, you know, there's no sense of discovery without first feeling a little lost. So that's, I think, what a lot of this work does for us in this show.
The feeling that I've got having walked around this show and taken my time to do so, it reminds me of the feeling I had seeing Ranja Kjartansson's show at the Barbican, where I feel like I'm using a different set of apparatus to enjoy this and interpret this. I feel like I'm enjoying this like I'd enjoy going to a concert or anything. It seems very visceral. I don't feel like I've been around a gallery, and I don't mean that in a bad way. Is that something that you've done pointedly, or that's almost happened by accident?
No, I mean, that's really kind of close to one of the core concerns of this show, was to get video work that has a kind of visceral impact, because I feel we are inundated with images of all kinds, and to do an exhibition like this, you really want to be able to make a difference and to show a different kind of approach. And that's the great thing about art, is it's not following the same formulas that everyone else is following. It's going a step beyond that. And, you know, we, in looking at and being obsessed with images, we sort of forget that we actually have bodies and that we're in a physical world. And this work even though you've described as having this disembodied effect, it also, I think, brings you back to thinking, there's another way to relate to this image scape that we inhabit most of the time.
Yeah, and just finally then, that seems like an amazing thing. There is a kind of slow burn quality to this show as well, and to the works here. You're looking at images, your gaze never breaks from them. There's nothing, and I guess that's the effect of walking to a black space and seeing a video and having the audio all around you as well. It seems very immersive without being kind of studiedly so, and I guess the music's got that as well. We're listening to just, you know, loops, very, very, very tight loops of a lot of songs here, or songs stripped right back. There is a kind of slow burn effect to this, which negates that kind of addiction to image culture that we might have. I wonder again if that's something that has sort of happened organically off the back of this show, or whether that's something that you discussed with the artist.
Well, I think it's connected to the idea you brought up of experiencing these works in a kind of multi-sensory way, that it's not just eye candy. You know, you've got this sound is 360 degrees, that's around you all the time. And some of these pieces have a tactile experience. And then because of this building, there's this whole architectural spatial element that's thrown in sometimes. And I think that, in a way, it's like slow food or something, right? I mean, you know, it's worse. I think the way we're normally relating to images is like fast food. It's very easy. It's just facile consumption. These works slow you down, and you want to watch them again and again. I mean, my experience when I first saw so many of these works was I didn't want to leave the room. You know, I just thought, okay, I need to see this again. And in a lot of cases, it wasn't until I'd seen the work five or six times that I started to feel like I really knew the imagery. Because sometimes I would see the work on the fifth time, and I'd go, my God, I had no idea this shot was in here. Because some of these works are also very dense. And they're asking you to do many, to look at two screens at the same time, several tracks of sound. Some of them have text as well. You're reading as well as looking at images. But all of that, I think, is a way of opening up the way we're responding to these works and making it much richer. Because they're also, a lot of these works, I think, have a real emotional hit. There's so much video out there that's very dry, very didactic, sometimes self-indulgent, and like, you know, it's an hour long and it's asking a lot of you to watch the whole thing. And these works, I think, give you a lot immediately. The longest piece is 14 minutes. I think they're all a watchable length for a gallery. And that's important.
Me and my niggas hold deep in a white Toyota. A quarter tank of gas, one pistol and orange soda. Janky stash box when the Fender rallies a roll up.
Thanks, Ralph. All this sound, all this music, where's it all coming from? Well, the Infinite Mix is a collaboration between the Hayward Gallery and the Vinyl Factory, whom you might well know. They started off pressing vinyl, helping to spearhead what we've been calling the vinyl revival. For a while now, they've been associated with wonderful experiential art shows. We talked about Ragnar Kjartansson at the top of this programme, and it was the Vinyl Factory who staged the Icelanders at Visitors Show in Soho's Brewer Street car park. Sean Bidder knows his onions, and he's the creative director of the Vinyl Factory.
Essentially, part of our DNA is collaboration, really. Collaboration with musicians, and those initial releases that we put out with various bands on our record label, part of that was always focused around the artwork and the art element of what those releases were, primarily because they were on vinyl and that was such a kind of important component of the release. And that led us to begin to collaborate with visual artists who were either making music or for whom music was a part of their artwork. And people like Jeremy Deller and Martin Creed, and then many others followed in that suite. And for us, in many ways, a vinyl record is an audiovisual experience. It's a personal experience to some extent, because you have a record that you take out and play at home, and you pour over the sleeve artwork, or you look at the images, and there's this connection that you make between the visual and the audio. And that led us to expanding upon that idea and really beginning to host events and exhibitions and installations that took that into a physical space. So not hosting or showcasing pictures on wall as such, but using unusual large urban spaces, whether they're car parks — we have shows at Brewer Street Car Park — or the space that we're in now, right now, which is this vast brutalist office building. And these shows are fantastic for showcasing this kind of large-scale audiovisual work because it's really all about experience. It's about people wandering into the space and seeing something, hearing something that is more immersive than a traditional show in many ways. And the Hayward and Ralph at the Hayward, obviously a fantastic partner in that regard. I mean, I think Ralph's previous shows, he's got a great knack of being populist, but also putting on challenging, engaging work. So things like Carsten Holler or Jeremy Deller over there, you know, they're works that if you went into the gallery, you'd see all kinds of people in the space, young, old, different demographics, you know, tourists and people that have lived in London all their lives. And we really love the idea of a space as a communal environment as well, where people come together and, you know, good things hopefully happen from that.
Good times for all. There's an interesting thing that Ralph said in our interview with him just now, where he said that he could walk around the show with his eyes closed, which is a great testament to the audio side of this audio-visual show. I mean, it's such a strong part of this thing. It really glues, actually the music and the audio glues your eyes to the images that much more. Does this feel to you kind of like a departure for Vinyl Factory, or does this feel like the zenith of your aim as a visual and an audio kind of brand, I wonder?
Yeah, we really think it's not a departure. It's really, I suppose it's just raised up what we've done to date, really. I think that you have a completely different experience, whether you're listening to a record as opposed to, you know, downloading or streaming online, as you do to coming to a show like this, where it's really physical. Like, you're in the space. The sound is phenomenal. There's been a lot of care and attention given to all of that kind of thing. But also the way that the visuals and the music work together, there are multi-screen pieces here. There are 3D pieces. You're in an enclosed environment where your focus is really what's in front of you, and it's so easy these days to be distracted by a million other things, or to, you know, upload images to Instagram while you're texting someone, etc., etc. So you're getting a somewhat diluted experience. I think what's great about these spaces is you're almost sort of subjected to being in an environment. And what's fantastic about this show, which I think is different from a lot of other art exhibitions, is the music is really great, and it's contemporary. I mean, you know, there's Jamaican dancehall in this show, there's jazz funk, there's Kendrick Lamar. It's stuff that people know and love already, and therefore in many ways there's a familiarity to the work. It's not pop video, it's going to resonate in different ways to that, but it's not obscure either. And I think that's really important for us, because we feel that audiovisual art, music and installations should appeal to kind of a broad section of people. That's what's great about public art, really. And that's one of the reasons why we wanted to make this show free, so that all kinds of groups of people could come in here, whether they're 16-year-olds or people that may not necessarily know what they're going to like, but because it's free, they can come in, they can experience it, and hopefully they'll get something from it.
As far as I'm concerned, you guys have mixed up that idea of experiential art so nicely, especially with your things at the Brewer Street car park, the Ragnar Kjartansson show, which was such a hit. We were talking about it with Ralph at the Barbican and stuff. And the idea that people can go and experience something that's contemporary art, but actually use all the tools that they would use to enjoy a pop concert or a movie or a festival, actually. There's a nice group vibe to so many of the things that you put on. Is that something you can engineer, or is that always a happy accident?
I think you just find good people to work with. Hopefully that's what you do. I mean, I think if you asked younger people now, 16, 25-year-olds, about all those kind of divisions between different things, I don't think they exist for them. I think, you know, music, video, art, it's all just what's good and what's not good. It's what's interesting. And I think the divisions were set up by different industries, whether it's the art world or whether it's the music industry, etc. But really, it's just all about how you put work on in space. And I think the artists, there are enough really interesting artists, and some of them are traditionally musicians, some of them are traditionally from the fine art world, but really they're all crossing over in this middle ground. I mean, Jeremy's making music, Massive Attack are trying to make, you know, documentary films with different people and put those shows on. So some of those people are taking that into a non-conventional pop environment, some people are taking it to the gallery environment. So we think it's all about space, really. If you look at Massive Attack at Manchester International Festival, you can't put those kind of shows on in a traditional music venue. It just doesn't work. And likewise with the sort of art shows that we're doing on, you can't put them on in a white wall gallery, because it's just too conventional. People want volume, they want a different kind of experience, something out of the ordinary, really. So we feel as though a lot of the artists we work with, they always want to do that. I mean, whether it's Ragnar or whether it's Jeremy, they're always interested in putting on their work in a really exciting way on multiple screens, so it's a complete experience. But yeah, it's how you use different spaces to do that, really. So we're fortunate that we do have access to some of those spaces.
And what mood does it put you in when you walk around this show? Because people are very different from when they walked in this morning with their notepads and pens and sort of, you know, busy frowns on their face to the, how they are this afternoon. But you've seen this, you've put it all together. How does it still affect you? What's the vibe?
It makes me feel great. I mean, I find myself, you know, there's different kinds of pieces here. There's a few pieces where you just, as some other reviewers said, you find yourself nodding along. You know, you want to spend time. The music is just fantastic. There's other pieces that are more contemplative. You think about them a bit longer. There's something a bit deeper that resonates. But generally, it puts you in a great mood. I mean, it's inspiring, I think. I mean, that word's not, you know, it's kind of been overused to some extent. But if you come into a show like this, I don't think you can leave not feeling inspired by something that you've seen, which is, you know, makes me all feel great about us putting on the show with the Hayward.
Finally, let's ask an artist, Jeremy Deller. You like him. He makes witty, wonderful, alternately whimsical and powerful work in film, installation and performance. Joy and People was the name of his survey show at the Hayward, and that sums up his attitude, I think. Jeremy made a film for The Infinite Mix with the choreographer Cecilia Bengolia. It's called Bom Bom's Dream and features a Japanese dancer getting all Alice in Wonderland in Jamaica.
Give thanks and praise to Almighty God. Yeah, Bam Bam is the best dancehall queen in Japan. Yeah, he's dreaming. Yeah, because he loves dancing.
Cecilia goes to Jamaica quite a lot and has met Bom Bom there. Bom Bom goes to Jamaica all the time and competes in dancehall competitions and is quite well known on the scene. So we knew she would be there, and Cecilia thought that we should try and do something with her. And I thought that probably the best way to do film with her is to do a sort of something incorporating a dream, because that way you can get away with anything. That's how I felt.
Very wise.
And we weren't really sure how it would work out in Jamaica, how we could organise our time and so on. And because, for example, the big competition she was going to be in was cancelled at the last minute. So we had to sort of improvise quite a lot. Hence all the effects and the sort of dream sequences and so on. It was just a way of structuring the film, really.
You talk about the effects, and they're fantastic. They're kind of really lo-fi and kind of rudimentary.
It's kind of green screen. It's sort of very sort of basic, simple green screen. But weirdly, when we were looking at pop promos that are made in Jamaica, that most of them use green screen now, with slightly different effects, but it's the sort of standard way of making a pop promo, almost.
And did Bom Bom need much direction? I mean, it sounds like you're just kind of going, okay, we're witnessing something, go for it, and then we're gonna put some effects in, and we're gonna give it some sort of narrative afterwards. But basically, did you just tell her to ask her to get on with it, and we'll invade your universe for a little moment in time?
There was a little bit of that, but also we knew that we wanted this idea of a dream, so we had to do shots of her dreaming, but also we wanted her to be seen in the environment, in the countryside, in different places in Jamaica, not just in a party. So we did go out of our way to try and film her and sort of doing slightly different things. I mean, there's tons we filmed that was never used, but there are shots of her in the film in the countryside and doing things she wouldn't have done otherwise. So we had to think about it a little bit. But, you know, when it comes to the parties themselves and the footage of the parties, that's just what it is, and you just film what you're seeing in front of you. So it's more documentary style, really.
Yeah, because there's moments of that film, as you say, you take your camera out to the countryside in Jamaica. There's bits that seem really, they're funny, but they're also quite reflective. There are those lovely quiet bits in Terrence Malick films where, you know, in the middle of the Vietnam War or something, suddenly you'll be looking at the butterflies and the lizards crawling through the jungle.
Yes.
There's a bit of that compared to the craziness of the dance hall.
A little bit of cosmic natural world footage. You're right, we wanted a bit of reflection, because otherwise you're just making a sort of pop promo, really, and it was never going to be that, and it should never have been that. It was meant to have a sort of dreaminess to it, obviously, because it's meant to be a dream, so it's meant to be something a little bit more reflective, I think. But the end of the film is just a more or less unedited 4-minute sequence of her dancing and winning a prize at a club on a Monday night, where she just dances and quite, I mean, that's incredibly raw footage and raw sounding as well, but that's, I shouldn't even give it away, but that's the sort of climax of the film, really, when she wakes up and she does this incredible dance.
Well, I know in the notes that are in the book that comes with this Infinite Mix show, Jeremy, there's a chat between you and Cecilia and Ralph Rogoff, the director of The Haywood, and you talk a little bit about Alice in Wonderland. That's what you kick off starting about. Maybe you can give us an idea of that. There is a bit of drink me, eat me, of becoming part of some fantasy, isn't there?
Well, there's a lot of, in the film, I like the idea of Alice because it's just someone changing shape and size and meeting creatures that could speak. And she does that. There's a narrator, really, in the film that's a chameleon who speaks of her and wants to marry her. And in the end of the film, something else entirely different happens without giving too much away. So there's that, and she is shrunk at one point, and she's in the clouds dancing, and she has adventures, really. But at the end of the day, the biggest adventure is what happens when she wakes up, when she does actually dance for real, as it were. But it was always meant to be something like Alice, where your protagonist is a woman who has all these amazing experiences, really. And that's sort of what she has, and dancing in the clouds and so on. But like I said, it was a convenient way to make a film, give a structure to a film that might not have had a structure, really. So it's a sort of, we're very happy to have that kind of idea of a dream, because it means you can do whatever you want.
Walking around the show as a whole, it seems like a very amazingly immersive, and I feel that people, or I found myself walking around that show using a different set of rules to look at these things. I really enjoyed it, as I might enjoy going to a pop concert, or I might enjoy going to something very communal like a festival, or it was very immersive in a very easy way. I guess that there's both accident and design in that.
That's actually to do with a lot of things, not least making the rooms comfortable, where you can sit down on the carpet and watch something. You can dip in and out of films. Some of them you can dip in and out of because some of them are so long. But on the whole, I think it's really to do with how the rooms look. The fact that they're carpeted means you can sit on them, and also the sound is okay. It's not distorted or too loud. The projections are very high quality. So it's a very quite high production values, and which makes things watchable and make you want to stay and watch, basically.
That was Jeremy Deller, one of the artists on show at the Infinite Mix, and you can pick up a special vinyl edition of the music used in his work from the exhibition, as well as music from pieces by Stan Douglas and Cameron Jamie, whose film was soundtracked by Sonic Youth. And that brings us to the end of today's show. The Infinite Mix by the Haywood Gallery and the Vinyl Factory is on at the store 180 The Strand until early December. Be sure to get down and see it. And for more information, head to theinfinitemix.com. You've been listening to Culture, where my producer was Holly Fisher, the woman with the keys to the talking chameleon's cage. Join me again at the same time next week. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bounds, and thank you very much for tuning in.